He was harmless. Unlike me, he hadn't figured out how to deal with Mephisto's choking clutch. His father was too caught up in the issues with the Bratva, his fiancée had left him, and his friends were inept. There's no reason I can think of for someone to kill him, yet it's clear by the fact the condition hasn't been fatal to me even after years that they did. I wonder why. I wonder who could have been so cruel as to leave a father in such sorrow, crying,
"That's enough,"
Rosemary stopped him, causing Nick to nod to himself as a thought entered his mind. "Were you with him before the tournament?" Nick asked, pressing the issue. Rosemary started to object, saying,
"I will not humor that line of..." "Oh, she was!"
Serafina interrupted, her eyebrows raised in surprise as if she had just thought of the connection.
"I remember it! She left early and Ronaldo saw the two of them. I said that's enough!"
Rosemary attempted to silence the conversation yet again, but from the look on Isolde's face, it was clear that she now fully suspected Rosemary was responsible for Evan's death.
"Well, whoever got rid of him, good riddance,"
Isolde said half-heartedly, raising her cup and extending it to Nick. "Indeed," Nick replied, clinking protein shakes with Isolde before they both took a sip.
"Oh my, this is so good, you weren't even joking,"
Isolde gushed as she drank the shake.
"Oh, wow, I can even feel the effect. You really know your stuff."
"Thanks," Nick replied, smiling and looking over to Serafina and Rosemary, who both looked like they'd been hit with an emotional truck after Nick had shifted the suspicion for Evan's death onto Rosemary. "Are you too sure you don't want one?"
"Did you use nutmeg? Allspice?"
Isolde asked as she continued to sip the drink without a care in the world, as if the idea that Rosemary had killed Evan was less interesting than swapping recipes. "We did use nutmeg," Nick said, impressed she could identify it. "We made a blend of cinnamon, ginger, cloves, and allspice, ground it up and mixed it with nutmeg, not exactly in equal proportions, but close enough. Then the rest of it is just a shot of espresso, some milk, a half scoop of flavorless protein, a touch of vanilla extract, and that sap I was telling you about."
"Really? And this counts as a protein shake?"
"Yep. Though if you don't want the caffeine, we do decaf options too," Nick said. "Just most of us are working out, so the caffeine helps us focus and keeps those weights pumping."
"And here I thought you were just some muscle-headed peasant."
Isolde replied with a laugh.
"I had no idea you were such a genius. I have to say, I absolutely must tell Father about this. He won't believe me otherwise. If you two are quite done, then perhaps we can finally have a conversation,"
Rosemary said. "I've been eager to hear what brought you three out this way since you first arrived," Nick said. "You're the one who insisted on being awkward about things. It almost felt like you were simply trying to establish that your social position is above mine before bringing out whatever chips you have to bargain with."
"With that handsome smile and that delicious-looking body of yours, you can put me in any position you like. Socially, of course."
Isolde's suggestive words were quickly followed by a long, slow sip of her drink.
"Will you stop that? He's your cousin!"
Serafina blurted out.
"You keep saying that like we're even closely related enough for that to matter,"
Isolde countered, clearly not caring at all.
I will tell your father if you keep this up,"
Serafina threatened.
"Why would he care? He and Mother are seventh cousins, and my best friend Matilda just got married to her sixth cousin,"
Isolde continued. "Well, as much as I appreciate the compliment and the interest, I'm sorry to say that I'm taken," Nick said, making his position clear. "But you're more than welcome to stop by for another protein shake whenever you like."
"Taken? I see no ring. Is it some landless peasant? Someone without even a single title? Did you hook up with one of your serving girls?"
Isolde asked. "I think you should remember that I'm also sadly a peasant without a single title to my name," Nick reminded her.
"Ah, yes, there is that."
She frowned as she pulled out a piece of paper and wrote down a number on it.
"Oh well, I know how particular you common folk are with your short-lived relationships. Do call me when it's over, though."
"Sure," Nick replied, putting the number in his pocket. "So, what brought you here?" Isolde's finger tapped the cup she was holding as she answered.
"Ah, right. The bookworm figured out a cure for your condition, and..."
"I already know how to cure my condition. I'm more than familiar with the solution, and it's only a matter of time until I find a way to acquire the final ingredient," Nick told her. But I appreciate the thought.
What if I were to tell you that there is an ingredient substitution that would expedite that process?
Serafina said excitedly, her mood restored.
What if I told you that the Devil's Claw extract can be substituted with the feathers from an obsidian sky terror?
Yes, that's why we came here.
Isolde added, sipping the remains of her drink through the straw as she looked disappointedly at the empty cup before setting it down and going for the cookie. So that's how it is. Nick sipped his drink too, realizing that much like Isolde's, the cup was empty. Having depleted his drink, he went to grab his cookie, only to discover that Isolde had snagged it and was eating it right there in front of him, a small smile on her face as she bit into it.
That's how it is.
Isolde giggled. Fine. So assuming I can verify that the substitution works, what do you want for the ingredient? Nick asked Rosemary, turning his attention to her. She hadn't come with these two to support them. She'd come with them to have them lay out the cards on the table. He had misjudged her. With what she had, she didn't need to establish a superior position. Rather, she had one from the start. After all, only an idiot wouldn't know that the only place to get feathers from an obsidian sky terror was Rosemary's own family dungeon, one of three dungeons she had exclusive rights to in the city.
You ask me when you already know,
Rosemary answered.
I want what's best for everyone.
Nick looked her in the eyes. And you think you're the one who can do what's best for people?
Indeed.
And assuming I can verify the story of yours, that you have the perfect substitute I need, what else do I get? I'm not averse to the trade you're talking about, but I want more, Nick said, putting down his cup as he leveled his gaze at her.
Is that not enough?
Rosemary asked hesitantly. I've lived with this pain for what might as well be centuries, and the symptoms I am suffering? Well, removing them isn't worth what you're asking, Nick answered. After all, as much as he did want to get rid of the symptoms, he couldn't forget his highest priority, the apocalypse. He just couldn't make a deal that wouldn't put him closer to stopping it, no matter how much such an agreement would benefit him personally.
What are they talking about?
Serafina whispered to Isolde, only not quiet enough that everyone couldn't hear her.
Fine. What else do you want?
I want some written guarantees about how you'll use the family resources, and also contracts assuring me that you'll assist me with a few things no questions asked, Nick said as he stared at the woman. This caused Rosemary to shift in her seat a moment. It was clear she wasn't expecting the negotiation to work on the first try.
Is that all?
She asked.
You aren't going to demand a cut afterward?
None, Nick assured her.
Then I think I just need to see the terms you're asking for,
Rosemary said. Very well. I'll draw up the papers myself, Nick said, standing up and extending a hand. Though this time, for the first time since he entered the room, Rosemary stood too, taking his hand.
It's always fun watching the untitled handle their affairs,
Isolde chuckled.
Like papers ever mean anything. If you really want someone to stick to their agreements, you need to tie the knot with them.
You're very interesting, Nick said to Lady Isolde. Come by again sometime.
What? Is that it? Are you leaving already?
Serafina looked a little disappointed. I have to get back to training. You're more than welcome to join, though, Nick offered. My door will always be open to you.
Oh, really? I heard the guild has a lot of magic training facilities and books and resources, and there is even a prophet or something named Daedalus that the guild is named after, and can we meet him?
Serafina asked, an eager look on her face. I'm sorry, but as far as others are concerned, I'm the only face of Daedalus, Nick apologized. After all, there was no Daedalus. But you can come by to use the facilities and check out our books, he turned to Isolde. Or just enjoy a protein shake.
Thank you,
Isolde said with a smile as she left the room, dragging Serafina with her.
Perhaps I'll see you another time, Yank. I'll...
Serafina looked like she wanted to say something, but nothing came out as she was pulled out of the room by Isolde. You didn't expect me to actually agree, did you? Nick asked, staring at Rosemary. It was hard to separate the war-torn, callous old crusader of the gallows from the young woman before him.
No,
she admitted.
If it were me, I'd have never given up what you're offering. So how could I have expected it to go so easily?
Rosemary, I can only give you one piece of advice before you leave. You'll never be able to trust an empire built by another king. The chancellors and ministers will only ever either doubt you or chase the idea of who they think you should be. He warned her before excusing himself from the office. The three ladies got into the limousine to leave.
So, did you get everything you wanted?
Isolde asked, snapping Rosemary out of the mental haze she had been lost in since the ending of the meeting.
I don't know,
Rosemary admitted in a rare moment of honesty.
He was impossible to read, and I don't know what those specific demands will be. I won't know until I see the contracts.
God, it was hard to focus. He was a rather handsome chap, wasn't he? Simply oozing charisma. His must be over 100. Real lady killer, that one.
Isolde droned on.
I wonder who the girl is, too. The one that he's taken with. You really think she is a serving girl? You think he's playing a young master with one of the staff in the linen closet? Oh my, I bet the details are juicy and scandalous.
I don't think he's the type to do that.
Rosemary disagreed. She wasn't sure of Nick's character, but the way he behaved, the way he casually treated such a serious conversation, and the way his eyes felt like they pierced through her very soul before he laid bare her most guilty moments for the room to see, left her sure of at least one thing. He was not so simple a person.
He seemed like he's still a nice guy,
Seraphina muttered as she shifted in her seat.
But he was also scary this time. When our eyes met, it felt like he wasn't even looking at me. And then, well, do you know the story of Daedalus?
Oh, the leader of their guild, the one who supposedly can see the future.
Isolde asked.
Daedalus is a fiction. My father pulled some strings and checked. Nick founded the guild himself. He registered the accounts himself. He's the one who has been predicting all the recent events. He's also the one who's been writing all the nearly free beginner guides on how to build classes, what to do in dungeons, how to use magic properly. He's the writer of the Daedalus guides, the man behind the mask, so to speak. And all the money earned from them is going into his pocket.
How has no one investigated how he knows everything? How have the government officials not found out?
Rosemary asked, even as she was blindsided by this information.
They probably know, but are keeping quiet because of his grandfather. Who wants to be the one who challenges Grandfather Gallows?
Isolde replied with a laugh as she took one of the champagne glasses from the drink stand next to her seat.
So, not only is he handsome, rich and powerful, but he's also mysterious, too. A once-in-a-lifetime genius who hid his abilities, knowledge, and talent until just the right moment, when he could break free of his bindings and forge his own path.
Isolde's smile was as mischievous as ever as she sipped her drink.
And you're not the least bit concerned about these revelations?
Rosemary had to question her cousin's sanity. She knew Isolde thought of everyone else without a proper title as less than a person, but the way she dismissed any possibility of them harming her was baffling to Rosemary, especially given how many assassinations were carried out by the very same peasants she ignored.
Why would I be? I'm not the one getting into bed with him. You are. Though I wonder what that contract will say now. I wonder what web the great Daedalus has spun for you, cousin.
Isolde replied, chuckling at Rosemary's situation.
And I wonder how my mother is going to take the news.
Rosemary thought as she looked at the champagne, wanting to drink a glass herself, but knowing that the moment she got back to her house, she'd have to explain things to her mother. She wanted to make sure she had her wits fully about her for that conversation. Chapter 6. As Nick watched the training skirmish, the group being led by Maria continued to hold their own, neutralizing Spencer's crowd controls and dodging Reginald's rather potent blacksmith spells. Nick couldn't help but feel a little confident in everyone's abilities. In particular, the way Maria had begun working with her team, keeping them in line and pushing them forward, was impressive. "It looks like she's completely copied your style," Alan commented as he walked up and stood next to Nick.
"That's good. That's how it should be."
"For now," Nick replied. His only concern now was that she wouldn't progress past what he had shown her. Not that she knew it, but he had tried to teach her how her future self had fought when there were still enough people to put together formations. But her performance now was still only a pale imitation. One of the main differences was that she was still just reacting to things. She would see Spencer or Reginald begin casting a spell, and then she would react to what spell they were casting. It wasn't bad that she was doing this, but it wouldn't be enough. In battle, one couldn't just react to the enemy. One needed to anticipate the enemy's movements and get ahead of them. If a combatant were clever, they would be able to lead the enemy by the nose, show a weakness, bait the enemy into acting toward that weakness, and already be prepared to counterattack before the enemy could even begin to move.
It's like Christmas.
He remembered the older Maria telling him.
If you wait until the day itself to start buying gifts, you're already too late. You need to study your family members and friends ahead of time. Anticipate what they'll want. Buy the perfect gifts and have them wrapped and under the tree well before the morning of the 25th. That's the first step toward winning Christmas.
Nick smiled as he thought about it, remembering how serious Maria had been when she said the words "win Christmas," insisting far more than once that Christmas was an event that you could win. For her, the holiday was some sort of Machiavellian chess game that one needed to play to win against their friends and family. Well, I didn't mean to interrupt your thoughts and all, but I wanted to remind you that you told us we needed to clock out early today to get prepped and rested for the raid tomorrow. Shouldn't you be stopping them? Alan said, bringing Nick back to the present as he looked over at his friend. Oh, right. Nick nodded, turning back to the group training in front of him as he asked Alan, Are you sure you're ready too? Tomorrow won't be easy. You say that like you haven't seen the way that evil, overbearing, merciless taskmaster of a girlfriend of yours has pushed us. Our formations are perfect, and yet she's still...
I still what?
Siowa asked as she joined the two, causing Alan to gulp as he turned around, coming face to face with the merciless taskmaster herself.
Nick couldn't help but feel bad for his friend as he saw the color drain from Alan's face.
Maybe we do another skirmish against the old Abyssal Knights. Maybe you need some more quality time training with Stacy and Lorenzo, since apparently I'm just some merciless taskmaster.
Siowa suggested, her words letting Alan know exactly how badly he'd stepped in it. Come on, Siowa, you should go easy on him. You still need him alive and full of energy for tomorrow, Nick said, putting a hand on Alan's back. Siowa eyed Alan for a moment as if she were considering whether to let him live, and then shrugged.
Fine, I'll let the slacker off this time, since I need to get home and start working on dinner anyway. Mum brought some wafer-thin strips of the good beef, and we're going to cook that up with some tasty mushroom soup.
Well, I'm going to stay and watch them until they're finished, make sure they don't stay too late, and then I need to go over the numbers and supplies for tomorrow one more time, Nick told her as he waved her on her way.
All right, but if something happens to you tomorrow, you're really going to be in trouble. Mum will be even more mad at you since you're missing the pre-dungeon send-off meal.
Siowa warned. Don't jinx it for him, Alan protested. You can't say things like that. You know how superstitious our boy is.
Okay, I won't, but you better take care of him for me. Make sure he doesn't work late.
Siowa cautioned Alan. Don't look at me. My mom needs me at the diner tonight. It's been really busy lately with the construction workers rebuilding the neighborhood, Alan told her. Siowa shook her head as she clicked her tongue.
Look at you, being such a good and upstanding son. I guess this means I can't mess with you tomorrow then either.
Wait, before you go, I forgot to ask. Have you finished packing your backpacks? Nick stopped the two of them before they could depart, remembering he had forgotten to double check.
Yep, all done. I did mine last night and triple checked it before the gym this morning.
Siowa quickly and cheerfully replied, but given the look on Alan's face, Nick already knew his friend's answer.
Really? Are you still not done?
Nick didn't hide the disappointment on his face as he looked at Alan.
What were you even doing last night?
Alan looked guilty for a moment. I was trying to make a reusable version of the monofilament sword. Something with a similar level of destructive capability, but with more durability than a piece of paper. Any luck? Nick asked, remembering how hard Alan had worked on that problem in his last life to no avail.
Nope, Alan sighed.
But I did manage to get a better signal cast on my high-altitude drone. Nick sighed, taking in a deep breath as he debated whether to scold Alan for not packing his bag or praise him for another technological invention. Fine, fine. Just make sure you have the backpack packed and ready for tomorrow. If you're missing a single item, I'm going to make sure Elizabeth helps you with extra weight training, Nick threatened. I promise I'll get it done. I'll even send a picture, Alan promised. All right, then. See you around, bro, Nick replied, waving the two of them off as he turned his attention back to the match in front of him just in time to see Reginald, Giant's Vihander in hand, cast a spell that enveloped his entire group in a bright orange glow. The moment the glow appeared, they seemed to abandon all caution for an instant, trusting in Reginald's armoring ability as they ignored Maria and her team's attacks and lunged forward with their weapons. The exchange happened in a moment, Maria doing her best to defend herself from one attack while also shielding her companion from another one at the same time. However, that was only two of them, and the other member of the shield wall facing off against Reginald traded blows to their loss. The orange glow around Reginald's team negated one of Maria's team's attacks, letting them easily beat the other two in the quick exchange, tipping the odds in Reginald's favor. Yeah. You can't just copy me, Nick thought as he sighed. She was nearly as good as he was at commanding her team after only a few weeks of training, but even he wouldn't have been prepared for such a perfectly timed armoring spell from Reginald that let his team absorb a single blow. All right! All right! Good show, but you guys need to stop for the day, Nick yelled after the results of the match were clear. He could see Maria pouting. Since only two of her members had been taken out, she clearly wasn't satisfied with Nick ending things, but he knew she'd pout just as much if he had waited for her to lose anyway. True to his word, Alan not only sent a pic of the backpack and the checklist of things he put in it, but also a description of the organizational method he'd used, all less than an hour after he got back home. He hadn't left out a single item or detail either, making Nick think that, for once, things were looking like they'd go smoothly as he redid his own backpack and preparations, no longer doubling up on some items since it was clear Alan was already bringing them. Following that, he didn't know what to do with himself. COI had headed home earlier than usual for the night, the Walters were at Gold's Guild, and his parents hadn't reached out or returned a call in days. It was just Nick and the quiet of his thoughts as he leaned back in his chair and stared out at the city through the large windows in his bedroom. Even though this was far from the first time he'd been alone with his thoughts at night, it was the first time he hadn't had exercise or something else to distract him, as he knew better than to overwork his muscles before a big day. The stillness of the whole world somehow reminded him of his old life. He could remember clearly the time he'd had to cover himself in mud and lie perfectly still, barely breathing as he prayed the Knoll scouting troop wouldn't notice him pressed against the wall of the building they were passing. For all the chaos, death, and destruction that the apocalypse had ushered in, there were far more moments of quiet, of waiting, praying, and hoping that quiet would never shatter. Just as he was getting lost in his thoughts, though, his phone beeped. He looked down and saw a message from Sioa about her brother, Tejo, who had managed to get a date with Stacy so long as she could pick where they went, and she had picked a Renaissance fair and gone dressed head to toe as a soldier from the 1300s. Yeah, that sounds like Stacy. Nick chuckled before texting Sioa goodnight and deciding to crash early. After all, the last few weeks of training had all been for tomorrow, and he didn't want to let anyone down. Chapter 7. As Nick, COA, Mr. Walters, Elizabeth Arnold, and Topaz rode in the van to the event, Elizabeth turned to Nick and said,
Now, I think this goes without saying, but if we don't make it to the Ecto Sanctuary because you think you see something in some random parking lot, I'm going to have to... We're going to make it this time. Promise?
COA quickly replied, answering for Nick.
And just to make it sure, he's not allowed to look outside the window.
I'm not? Nick asked, only to have COA throw a sleep mask over his eyes. What? Did you really?
Elizabeth was complaining about how you were going to come up with some way to divert us from the dungeon all week. I had to think of something.
COA explained. All week? How come I didn't hear about it? Nick had no idea what was going on. And didn't we end up with an awesome dungeon of our own last time? Was it really that bad of a memory?
I was promised the Ecto Sanctuary,
Elizabeth said, standing her ground on the subject.
I was excited for the Ecto Sanctuary. Instead, I ended up on a frozen mountain wearing clothes meant for spring.
It'll be fine this time, I promise.
Siowa continued to assure Elizabeth as Nick just sat there, wondering how what he had done had somehow been so traumatic for Elizabeth, and whether she was purposefully omitting the assassins, or the improper clothing for the weather really had been the worst part of that experience for her. When they finally arrived and Nick was allowed to take off the sleep mask Siowa had thrown over his eyes without even asking him, he was greeted by a ridiculously beautiful sight. The base guarding the entrance of the Ecto Sanctuary was situated on the outskirts of the city, up a mountain and through dense forest. It was a magnificent structure that blended in seamlessly with its natural surroundings. As Mr. Walters parked the van they had driven, Will pulled in and parked the large bus the guild had rented to ferry all the different groups to the dungeon off in the distance.
"Drive was really nice," Will said as he opened the door to the bus and hopped out. "Honestly, kind of surprised. I expected there to be more people."
"Not likely," Nick told him.
"Only thing out here is the sanctuary, and not only is it pretty expensive, but we've booked most of the limited number of slots available for the dungeon."
"I can imagine," Will replied.
As his guild members exited the bus, Nick counted each one mentally. That included not just Maria, Spencer, Alan, Reggie the blacksmith, and Adele, but also all the remaining lobies and beginners they had been training with, including Maria's former teammates, Andrea, Tabitha, Joe, and Daryl. The group also included the three shield users that had protected Spencer and Adele from Maria's fury, Robert, Winter, and Noel. Finally, there was Christina, a former veteran fencer who had taken advantage of the guild's resources and Nick's guidance to change her class to the more suitable Celestial Inquisitor, landing her back with the newbies.
"So, you all remember your groupings?" Nick asked as they gathered up in the parking lot. "Group one, is everyone there?"
"Here, boss,"
Noel called back. Robert and Winter both answered,
"Here."
But their answers were drowned out by the group leader's response as Reggie shouted,
"Group one, go!"
"I'm here," Spencer muttered, looking a little annoyed at Reggie's overly enthusiastic outburst.
"Oh, come on, Spence, you gotta put more heart into it. We're group one, the dream team, the Hippogriff's number one."
Reggie cheered, trying to raise Spencer's spirits.
"I sometimes forget our quiet, hard-working blacksmith is still just a jock,"
Siowa muttered.
"You're a jock, too," Nick noted with a laugh. "He's just been to enough pep rallies to know the importance of pumping people up before the game."
"Damn right I have," Reggie agreed as he added in another. "Hippogriffs are number one!"
"What is this hippogriff stuff, though?" Nick had to ask.
"Spencer said he thought they were the coolest mythical creature, so that's our team name. We're the Hippogriffs, and we're going to crush the scoreboard and get way more XP, loot, and kills than those other two groups. Just you wait,"
Reggie assured them. Given how well Reggie had done during the graduation exams, which had come practically immediately after his class reset, Nick didn't doubt it. He knew how capable the previous fencing champion was, and the change in class had clearly only been a minor inconvenience at first for him, and later a massive boon as he learned to use his skills and strength both in and out of the forge.
"All right, all right," Nick raised a hand for them to be quiet before looking over at Elizabeth.
"Are you sure you can handle them?"
"I'll keep them safe,"
Elizabeth assured him as she pulled out her medicine ball.
"And I'll make sure that the hippogriffs beat the other group soundly into the ground so that further education isn't necessary."
"Group two, is everyone here and ready?" Nick asked, turning to the next team's group leader, Maria.
"Group is all accounted for,"
Maria said.
"We'll take care of her,"
Tabitha added. Joe, Daryl, and then Andrea sounded off next.
"Yep, here, here.
Ecto Sanctuary time!
And I'll be taking good care of them,"
Mr. Walters, the ever-dependable, promised.
"You can trust me. They'll all come back safe."
"Group two will be number one. You see, that's just confusing. That's why you guys need a team name like ours. Maybe, the Tigers or something?"
Reggie suggested.
"Then when you say that the Tigers will be number one, it won't sound as weird."
"That's not bad. I like Tigers."
"Well, if their group is the Tigers, then we're the Turtles."
"What? The Turtles? No, we need to be something cool, too, like,
like the dragons.
Tobaz insisted, trying to push her team toward a better nickname.
But turtles are cute and have hard shells and make a great soup.
Siwa argued.
And now we know how Nick landed her, Alan remarked with a laugh.
Fine, dragons. We can be team dragons,
Siwa said, giving up quicker than Nick had expected.
I'm fine with that,
Tobaz agreed, nodding.
Team dragons!
Adele shouted, matching Reggie's energy as she put her hand out in the middle of her group. Siwa, Christina, Tobaz, and Alan followed suit, all of them then raising their hands at the same time and shouting out their team name yet again. Arnold, the third team's coach, just said,
Team Dragons.
So that just leaves you, boss, Will said. Which team are you going to start with? Dragons, hippogriffs, or tigers?
I'll be on Team Billpayer, it seems, Nick said as he caught the eye of a man wearing the bright neon green and black colors of the Sanctuary Guild heading their way. Likely there to make sure they had their tickets, got through the portal, and had the best experience possible. After all, with the easy-to-kill monsters, quick and streamlined quests created by the guild, and high experience and reward values, among other things, the dungeon rightfully had one of the highest entrance fees out of all the dungeons in the city. It was used by the richest and most powerful families to level up and gear out their children, so rarely did anyone come to the guild that wasn't worth knowing and treating well.
So, this is the Daedalus party, the concierge from the Sanctuary Guild asked as he came over to them. Are you all ready to enter?
Yes, immediately,
Elizabeth insisted. Nick decided to just go with it.
What she said.
Then follow me, the man replied, and then led them through the parking lot and into the base before showing them through the portal. Along the way, Nick couldn't help but take note of all the different layers of defense the guild had for their portal. Most guilds put up a single concrete barrier, stationed a few guards, and did the bare minimum required by law to protect their portal. That wasn't the case with the Sanctuary Guild. Nick's people had to go through three separate checkpoints, each heavily guarded with elite staff, security cameras, and thick, heavy doors that they had to be buzzed through. There were even two sets of turrets.
It's no wonder they lasted so long, Nick thought aloud as he went through the final barrier and stepped into the portal room.
All right, now that you're here, make sure to take an armband before entering the portal. It's part of our kill and quest tracking system, so please don't forget them, the concierge reminded everyone.
Yep, line up single file for the portal. I'll hand out the armbands. No going in until it's on perfectly.
Elizabeth instructed everyone as she took point, taking the bands from the guide and dispensing them to the members before they stepped one by one through the portal. Nick felt the familiar twisting sensation of portal travel, and then with a yank, he found himself stumbling into Mr. Walters as the man looked around. Nick saw Elizabeth and the rest of their guildmates materialize beside them, looking around as their eyes adjusted to the night and the torchlight that illuminated the cobblestone courtyard of a medieval castle. The sky above the castle looked like Van Gogh's Starry Night, but in real life, a natural canvas painted with the glowing waves of the Aurora Borealis. Vibrant greens, purples, and blues weaved through the velvet expanse. The courtyard, however, matched the activity of the other side, even if the scenery was entirely different. Instead of the futuristic barriers and modern fortifications, the dungeon side of the portal looked like an old medieval keep with tall stone walls encircling a courtyard. Instead of the bright fluorescent lights that illuminated the real-world side, the flickering flames of torches lining the walls illuminated the interior of the yard beneath the bright neon purple streaks of magical energy that lit the sky above them.
Archers!
Someone on the battlements cried out, and nearly everyone in the courtyard turned towards the cry. The next moment, hundreds of arrows came flying downward from the dark sky. A man in a dark blue robe on the castle walls raised his hands, and a shimmering shield formed, intercepting the barrage. The arrows burned up as they hit the shield, and the quiet that had fallen returned to chattering and even laughing as someone exclaimed,
"Well, the random raids by those ghosts sure do keep you on your toes."
Nick turned to his group, some of whom looked a little concerned, and shrugged. "Every dungeon has its dangers. Who wants to go look for those quests we were promised?" Andrea raised her hand, and with a nod from Nick, she disappeared into the crowd. In the meantime, the rest of the group stuck together as they explored the castle. There were vendors selling armor, weapons, or offering repair services. The smell of cooking food brought a grumble from Nick's stomach, and he heard similar sounds from others, so while they waited, Nick bought everyone some chicken sandwiches to munch on. Andrea returned soon after.
There's a quest board on the other side of the castle. Here, I'll show you.
Nick turned to his guild.
All right, group leaders, come with me. The rest of you stay here. We'll be back soon.
Leaving the group, they followed Andrea through the crowd and across the entire length of the walled courtyard up to the castle proper. Crossing a small bridge, they entered the castle through a grand archway, the air inside heavy with the scent of burning candles. They ascended a large staircase, the sound of their footsteps echoing off the stone walls. Paintings depicting ancient battles and regal guild leaders adorned the walls, the eyes seemingly following their every move. At the top of the staircase, they entered a spacious chamber adorned with plush carpets and intricately carved wooden furniture. The room was filled with bustling adventurers from various guilds, eagerly discussing their previous quests and preparing for new ones. Behind the desk along the back wall were more of the Sanctuary Guild members with smiles plastered on their faces. A man sitting behind a desk glanced at the color of their wristbands, and his smile fell slightly before he said,
"Greetings, adventurers. What can I help you with today?"
"We'd like to get the quests we were promised and start working our way through the dungeon," Nick answered. With a nod, the man asked,
"What kind of work is your group wanting to do? Each quest is organized by the guild with varying degrees of difficulty and corresponding rewards. If you'd like to upgrade to a higher tier plan, we can offer..."
"Thanks, but we've heard the upgrade pitch before. Can you tell us what kinds of quests you'd recommend for a group of 20 with an average level of 17?
"Ah, a beginner group.
Excellent," the man remarked as he rifled through a stack of papers.
"Here we go. We have requests from a number of officers in the guild for support roles, bringing in food, wood, and stone. There are also scouting jobs to infiltrate and sabotage the enemy. We're looking for combat roles if possible," Nick clarified, not wanting to get stuck on fetch quests for their first raid. Frontline fighting seems a little outside your group's range given your low levels. Most of the foes near the enemy castle are levels 30 to 40. But we have some other quests," the man said as he handed papers to Nick.
"Skirmish in the Dark Woods. A series of nocturnal skirmishes have erupted in the dark woods surrounding the besieged forest. Engage with enemy scouts and ambush patrols while you navigate the treacherous terrain to secure vital information and eliminate threats. Beware, for the forest conceals both allies and adversaries in the shadows. Reward: 50 guild gold for every verified enemy scout group spotted. Bonus: 50 guild gold for every enemy scout group eliminated. Breach the enemy lines. The siege intensifies as enemy forces attempt to breach the castle walls. Venture into the fray, repel invaders, and secure key choke points. Your bravery in the heat of battle will decide the fate of the besieged castle. Reward: 600 guild gold for every choke point secured. Ghosts of the Battlefield. Reports speak of spectral apparitions haunting the woods, impacting the morale of allies and enemies. Investigate the eerie phenomenon, confront the restless spirits, and either dispel or harness their ethereal power to sway the tide of the ongoing siege. Reward: 500 guild gold. Siege Engine Sabotage. The enemy has deployed siege engines to breach the castle gates. Infiltrate the enemy camp, locate their war machines, and sabotage them to disrupt the assault. Success in this quest is crucial for the castle's defense. Failure could lead to catastrophic consequences. Reward: 100 guild gold for every siege engine destroyed. Spectral Purge. A spectral threat looms in the haunted ruins to the west. Reports confirm the presence of enemy ghost soldiers. Your mission is to exterminate these ethereal foes. Beware, for these ghosts are not mere apparitions. They bear the skills of the soldiers they once were. Reward: bring back spectral artifacts as proof of your kills, and your reward will be determined by both the quantity and rank of the vanquished spirits.
Nick scanned the papers for a moment, and then, with a smile, nodded.
"Good. We're going to take them all," he said, thinking about how each one of these would be perfect in its own right for the coming days. To the rest of his guild, they had spent weeks training for this mission. To Nick, though,
They had spent weeks training so that they could go on a proper training exercise, training so that they could train. And now, thanks to a stroke of luck, each of these exercises seemed tailor-made for what they needed to focus on. Chapter 8. While Nick had never gotten a ton of time to play games in the past, he couldn't help but admire how the guild had created their own little quests in the same style as many of the early MMOs, with several of the quests overlapping in a way that made it easy to complete them simultaneously. For instance, Spectral Purge was an MMO's typical kill quest, only requiring that the group spot the enemy soldiers and defeat them, no matter which other mission they selected. As long as the mission wasn't a fetch quest or a resource-gathering one, that much was guaranteed to happen. It was similar to the Skirmish in the Dark Woods quest, which just required the group to travel through the Dark Woods, a location they'd have to go through to reach and complete the other quests anyway. That was two quests that he wouldn't have to think about, and which his guild could easily accomplish. This meant that the only quests he had to choose between were the one to secure the checkpoints and the one to destroy the siege engines.
"We can probably map a route to knock them both out,"
Siowa suggested as she looked over the quest options.
"Looking at how commercialized this place is, we can probably just buy a map," Reginald observed with a laugh.
That would be cheating and might be expedient, but it wouldn't hammer home the important lessons to all our newbies. They need to learn how to map, how to discover clues, how to find hidden things, skills that are necessary to survival, Nick replied, nixing that idea immediately.
"Ha! Can't take shortcuts, cheating just hurts your future, have to do everything the right way. I can't tell if Elizabeth or Sioa is the one rubbing off on you,"
Reginald quipped as he put a hand on Nick's shoulder.
"But you're definitely not the same class-skipping slacker from the past. Good job!"
Thanks, Nick replied, not sure how to take the remark. He turned his attention back to the quests. "But yes, we need to map things out ourselves, and we need to teach our groups how to do cartography. Each of you needs to select one person from your group to be in charge of that, and each of you needs to figure out how to do the scouting individually. We'll compare notes after the raid to see how accurate you were compared with the actual map."
"Well, I think it's fair that we have a rough game plan. The only thing left to figure out is how we're going to organize the march,"
Elizabeth said, turning to Nick.
"We have a lot more than 5 or 6 people, so we can't just walk as a group would normally."
Nick nodded. "I know. But the roads will at least allow us to march 3 people wide. We can put Reginald's group in front with Noel, Robert, and Winter at the head. They've gotten good at just blocking attacks, and with Reginald's armoring spells and Spencer's ice magic, it should be easy for those 3 to hold things steady until the rest of the raid can descend on any potential attackers that stop them."
"So that handles the vanguard. You want us on the rear guard?"
Siowa asked.
"Nah, I want you guys in the middle. I want Maria's team on rear guard duty."
"Huh?"
Maria looked confused.
"But then if a fight breaks out, we won't be able to take action as quickly."
"Only if it's a fight from the front. Your team has nothing but melee fighters in it. They'll be fine if the enemy tries to assail us from the back. We need that safety for our squishy, shieldless crew, which is half of COR's group right now," Nick explained.
"Topaz, Adele, Alan. Yeah, I can see them being squishy."
Siowa nodded, along with Nick's assessment.
"Alan isn't that squishy. With that mechanical arm of his, he can definitely block some attacks and dish out damage,"
Maria insisted, looking more than a little upset that her group had been pushed to the rear. "Maria, just trust me on this. Your group is perfect for the rear guard, and you'll be seeing plenty of action this raid. I didn't drag anyone out here just to be an overseer."
"Except me."
Elizabeth looked like she was going to pout as she pointed out the fact that the Walters had, indeed, been called on just to observe things.
"For now. After we get the kids back on the bus, we can go out and have as much fun as you want," Nick promised, not wanting to draw any extra ire from Elizabeth.
Reginald raised an eyebrow at Nick's comment.
"The kids? Aren't we the same age, bro?"
"Don't forget that promise,"
Elizabeth told Nick, ignoring Reginald's response.
"But I still think Sioa's team could be great as a rearguard, especially—"
"Maria, look at me,"
Nick said, pulling her focus directly to him as he looked down into her eyes.
The entire fate of this raid is going to rest in your hands. The position I've given you is arguably the most important one there is, which is why I've given it to you. I think you, and you alone, are capable of doing this. I'm trusting you. Okay?
Okay,
Maria muttered, casting her gaze down and away from Nick. Nick smiled, the plan having come together.
Good. Then that's settled. Let's get going, then. Reginald, organize up and lead the way. I'm going to stay in the middle with the others.
You got it, bro,
Reginald affirmed. Then, without even walking a single step, he looked over at his group and yelled,
Hippogriffs! We got Vanguard! Three wide! Let's roll! Hippogriffs number one!
His team shouted back as they all rushed over and formed up. Sioa just rolled her eyes at the display before frowning, then sighing, then exchanging a look of do I really have to with Nick before giving in and yelling,
Dragons! We're the heart of the group! Center formation! Best of the best! Form up behind the hippogriffs!
Aww. Cute, Nick said, the one word looking like it cut to Sioa's bones as she frowned back at him. He only gave her a shrug before turning to Maria, waiting to see if she would follow suit.
Team Tigers, we're the rear guard,
Maria said, clearly unable to fully get into the spirit as she called her own group over. Looking over at Mr. Walters, Nick was pleased to see the old man nodding as he watched the events unfold. Nick took it as a sign of approval from his mentor. After everyone formed up, it only took a minute longer before the groups were marching out of the Sanctuary Guild's gates and toward the enemy fortifications. Outside of the stone walls was a dirt road some 5 to 6 people wide. It was paved and had been worn down by the traffic of other groups as it wound toward a towering stone castle on top of a mountain in the distance. To illuminate the route between them and the siege fortifications themselves, there were not only the bright moon and stars in the sky above them, but long orange and yellow strands of light sparkling across the sky like paint splattered across a canvas.
Beautiful,
Nick heard Elizabeth mutter in amazement as she looked at the massive castle in the distance, the small plumes of smoke or effects from other guilds fighting the guards with magic and destroying pieces of the defenses not doing much to hide the grandiose nature of the magnificent stone castle. Its central keep, capped with gold and silver, still stood defiant amidst the siege. After they got a few thousand feet out toward the castle, Nick had the raid group break as each individual team sent out their scout, who was also their designated cartographer, to start mapping the areas around them. Alan's team finished first as he had the help of his high-altitude drone to take off into the sky and survey the entire area quickly, albeit without seeing any of the markers or finer details and points that a ground-level observer would notice. Nick knew it probably seemed like a dumb exercise to them. With technology as it was, everything could be mapped out quickly, and any dungeon they went into could be explored in minutes by drones like the one Alan was using. But that wouldn't always be the case. Electricity wouldn't be something a person could guarantee in the future, and technology would edge backward by the time the endless night event descended on them. And even in their own world, the terrain, the enemy encampments, and the bases would not be so static. Given he had been deemed useless in his past life, a throwaway loser with no ability to advance even while he was still working with Alan, he had been sent by the higher-ups on a lot of the near-suicidal scouting missions until the brass above realized they didn't have any capable mechanics or electricians besides him to repair what little they had left.
It's too bad we can't go to that castle directly,
Sioa said as she waited with Nick for the scouting party to finish. Nick nodded.
Yeah. It'd be nice. I can only imagine what the fighting there would be like, too. With all the explosions and smoke we can see from here, it's probably filled with magic and spells.
You'll be a high enough level for that fun sooner or later,
Elizabeth remarked as she kept watch over the newbie adventurers. While continuing a bit, they finally reached the major crossroads, where they were forced to choose between continuing toward the castle or veering toward a forest to the west, which was Nick's original intent. However, as it came time for the decision, Nick couldn't shake off a nagging feeling of unease. One thing of note was that the orange glow that had previously made the place feel bright and magical had somehow started to leave things feeling eerie. The shadows it cast looked like they were coming alive across the ground and trees, and they seemed to be getting dimmer and dimmer with every step. During the first break to scout ahead after taking the road west,
A shrill cry pierced through the silence some hundred or so paces into the forest. "Who is it?" Nick asked, checking the members to see which scouts hadn't returned yet.
"Winter! It's Winter's voice!"
Reggie answered quickly as Elizabeth darted into the forest toward the scream to make sure she was okay.
"Hippogriffs! We save our own!"
"The rest of you, hold here," Nick ordered as he ran after Reggie and his three companions, who had all taken off in that direction as well.
"Recall the scouts! Get the info and wait!"
As he ran, the smell of rotting eggs and compost hit Nick, and it took him a moment to place the smell as he recalled that his title Hound of Helsing gave him warning when the undead were near and a small bonus to damaging them. When he reached the location, he found Winter standing still, Elizabeth watching from nearby. Reggie, Spencer, Noel, and Robert began to build a formation around Winter as they faced off against a group of skeletons. Three archers were being protected by seven swordsmen and a larger skeleton wielding a man-sized cleaver. The big one appeared to be their commander.
"We got this,"
Reggie assured the girl, putting a hand on her shoulder.
"But next time, don't scream. That's how they'll find you, too. You need to remember the signals."
"They already knew where I was, but thanks,"
Winter replied, taking a deep breath as she readied her weapon. By the time the short conversation was over, the skeletons were already descending on Reggie's group, the three archers somehow identifying and trying to target Spencer, only for one of their arrows to be deflected while the others completely missed. Reggie opened the battle by immediately casting the orange shield that protected him and the others from a single attack. Spencer, who was being well guarded by them, prepared to channel something only to be stopped by Reggie.
"Spencer, don't use ice. They're undead. They're not weak against it,"
Reggie warned as he moved quickly from his first spell into his second, igniting the weapons of all five team members.
"It's fire and holy magic you have to use against the undead. Didn't you read the Daedalus Guide?"
"Got it," Spencer said, switching tactics. Nick had expected him to just change to a different spell altogether, but instead he took out a sword, the blade burning from Reggie's spell, and looked like he was about to battle it out with the rest of them. It was at this point that the seven skeletons in front took up defensive postures too, and the large one with the massive cleaver grabbed one of the skulls of the three archers, shattering it into pieces in its hands before casting the dust into the air. As the rest of the skeletal archer's remains collapsed to the ground, the bone dust turned into a large glowing green skull that began laughing as it flew closer to Team Hippogriffs. But the skull did nothing as it reached them, the illusion disappearing as quickly as it had manifested.
"Reggie! To me! We need to handle this quickly!"
Nick called out, realizing that while it looked like they had come across a lone enemy unit, it was likely a scouting party, and what the leader had done was send out a flare to alert the others. With that, Nick rushed forward, pulling out his spear, the weight of dedication, as he joined the party against the 10 foes in front of them. The clash happened in an instant. While Nick had thought Spencer was going to be wading through the fight with a flaming sword like the other members of his party that had been blessed by Reggie's blacksmith buff, he did something entirely different. As Reggie used his Vihunder to block the large cleaver of the giant skeleton, and Winter, Noel, and Robert each let Reggie's orange shield absorb one attack as they took out a single enemy before backing up to form a shield wall to protect Spencer, Spencer began focusing his magic on his blade. The small flames skittering up and down the sword erupted into something larger after a moment, manifesting as several small fireballs that shot up and over the three people in front of him before landing on the skeletons, vaporizing them in an instant.
"That's it!"
Nick cheered as he flanked the skeletons trying to push through the shield wall, his spear instantly piercing through the skull of the one attacking Robert on the right flank. So far, Spencer had killed three of the skeletons. Robert, Noel, and Winter had each taken out a skeleton, and Nick had managed to take one out as well, reducing the 9 regular enemies down to a mere 2, which were subsequently cleaned up in the next attack with little to no fanfare. At this point, even though Reggie was struggling to hold off the heavy, powerful blows of the skeleton leader, the monster couldn't do anything to protect its sides. Noel and Nick both reached it at the same time, each thrusting their weapons into the enemy and shattering its skull.
"Now turn around! We need to get back to the main force and warn them. We need to take precautions and hide until the enemies searching for their scouts give up,"
Nick said, taking off ahead of them as he rushed at full speed towards Sioa and the others. But by the time he reached them, it was too late. There, in front of Sioa's group, was a large, skeletal figure on a gaunt horse, its dark aura blocking out the dim orange light from the scattered shreds of magic in the sky. It looked at them for a moment before letting out a ghostly shriek and riding back down the hill and out of sight.
"That's going to be trouble," Mr. Walters remarked.
"What do you mean?" Nick asked as he caught his breath and started counting players to make sure everyone was still there, intact and healthy. Before Mr. Walters could reply, a whistling noise filled the air. Maria shouted,
"Archer fire! Shields up! Protect your squishes!"
The five members of the rearguard sprung to life in an instant, with Maria jumping in front of Alan with her shield as Tabitha jumped in front of Topaz, Joe in front of Adele, and Andrea and Daryl with Christina, Sioa, and Nick as they squeezed in tight and raised their shields over the top of the group's heads. Even with their best efforts, however, as the whistling grew louder and the arrows struck, Andrea's grunt of muffled pain made it clear that they wouldn't come out of the engagement unscathed. As Nick turned back to see what had happened to her, expecting to see an arrow lodged through her, he instead saw several arrows stuck in nearly the same spot on her shield. She then took the reprieve in combat to try to remove the arrows.
"It looks like the fancy equipment did its job," Nick noted, pleased with the money well spent as he watched Adele reach out and grab the girl's arm,
her hands glowing as they healed whatever damage Andrea's arm had sustained. Listening for a moment, Nick didn't hear any more of the whistling sounds. He turned to see Reggie and the others coming out of the forest right behind him.
"No, stay back there. Everyone get to Reggie's position. The woods will protect us from the arrows," Nick ordered, keeping his eye in the direction of the original volley as the two groups rapidly moved into the woods. Nick was surprised at how well organized they were when they moved. Everything was done nearly instantly. The constant drills and continuous training exercises and formation practice had apparently really paid off.
"What do we do now?" Reggie asked as the raid group got behind the trees and finished taking cover.
"We can't just stay here."
"It's a good question.
What do you think we should be doing, team leaders?"
Nick replied.
"Find the enemy and attack,"
Maria answered first, her sword in her hand.
"We know what direction those arrows came from. We know the angle of the volley. We can reach them before they reposition and stop a second round from being fired. I vote we keep moving so they can't target us. They're trying to reposition. We should do the same. We just need to take out the scout on the horse before he signals our new location,"
Sioa answered.
"Assess the situation," Reggie said. "I just got here."
"Well, I think we don't need to pick and choose between the two options. After all, Maria is right. We need to get them. But there is no guarantee we will reach them before the next volley. Instead, let's pick a route toward them and stick to the trees as we progress. Whoever is your best tracker, we need to try to find the route that the horsemen took and start from there."
Maria nodded.
"Got it. So, do we split up?"
"No. We stick together, keep the formations tight, and be ready to take stimulants if the enemy numbers are too great."
"Yes, raid leader,"
Reggie said, even giving a salute, only to draw quizzical expressions from Nick and the two other group leaders.
"What?"
Reggie asked.
"It just sounded cool. Like, yes, chef, but better. Don't give me those looks, I'm just showing respect to my bro."
"Whatever.
Hippogriffs! We're moving out! We'll take the lead. Keep the formation tight."
With that, he returned to his group to brief them on the situation, leaving only Maria and Sioa remaining.
"Protect your squishes,"
Sioa asked Maria, her question accompanied by a small chuckle and a shake of her head.
"What? I thought it'd be easier to make sure everyone knew who to keep safe in case of something while we were marching. Nick put us as rearguard for a reason, I thought,"
Maria said. "She's right. It's solid logic. It was a good call. That's the Maria I know," Nick said, smiling a little. He was rather impressed, not only by her adaptability to a defensive backline position, but also how she'd gotten her group to react so quickly, too. For just a moment, he saw a sliver of the Maria of his last life. The Maria that might one day save everyone. Chapter 9.
"I got him, just north of us,"
Alan announced as he watched the screen on his aerial drone's controller. Nick peered over to look at what Alan was seeing just in time to note the skeletal archers were firing.
"Arrows!"
Nick called out as he lifted his shield up.
"Squishy guard, go!"
Maria shouted, but nothing came at them. Instead, Alan's drone was peppered with dozens of arrows. It dodged many of them, but the number was impossible to outmaneuver, and many struck the drone, knocking it out of the sky before a second wave pinned it to a tree as it fell.
"Dang it! That thing cost me money!"
Alan cursed as he put away the controller.
"There's at least 2 dozen skeletons over the second hill north by northeast of us."
"Good job, tech support,"
Maria said, reaching up and ruffling Alan's hair like he was a kid before turning to her group.
"All right, we're gonna charge straight at them. Be prepared to block their arrows when—"
"No," Nick interrupted, shooting that idea down right away. "I know you're confident in your shields, but there is no reason to take that chance. If we go straight at them, it'll leave us in a clearing, vulnerable for too long. And we don't know what other tricks they have up their sleeves."
"Right, let's take the long route, sweep around them from the east, and keep to the forests as long as possible so that we can maintain cover,"
Siowa suggested, pointing toward the route that would allow them to flank the enemy.
That's fine, but it's a long route. They've already spotted the drone. There is no guarantee they won't switch positions or leave a trap since they know we'll be coming right at them,"
Maria countered, frowning at Siowa. "Well, don't worry about that. We can handle the unexpected if things go wrong," Nick assured her. "We've wasted enough time. Form up and move out."
"Wait, wait!"
Andrea, who had gone out to scout initially, had returned in a hurry to stop them.
"Don't go that way!"
"What do you mean?" Nick asked, the group halting as she caught her breath.
"I mean, there are at least 50 skeletons. It looks like they're melee contingent waiting just around the hill east of us, right where you're planning to head. I nearly ran into them and only got away by the skin of my teeth,"
Andrea reported, a sigh of relief escaping her lips as an arrow was pulled from her shoulder and the injury was healed. "Typical undead," Nick grumbled as he heard the report. He knew the strategy the enemy used all too well. They had employed it against the armies in the city often in his past life. They'd split their troops up, leaving several large groups within a few minutes' run of each other. Despite how vulnerable the groups looked, the moment they were engaged, the other group